You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 Show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up there. We want to hear from you. Voicemails, text messages, all of your reaction. Going to do a full mailbag on Wednesday, so make sure you get your questions in. 331-979-1369. Matt, welcome back from the weekend. Question for you. What's worse to watch? Cody Parkey kick field goals or Cameron Payne try to run a Bulls offense?
Ooh, wow. that's a tough one. I mean, I guess I'm going to say Cody Parkey just because it's more fresh in my mind, because thank the Lord we got a DNP from Campaign on Friday. So it's like I haven't watched Campaign struggle recently, as recently as Cody Parkey. But speaking of thank the Lord, I'm sorry, did you hear Cody Parkey's post-game interview from the locker room talking about, like, well, hey, you know, I trust in my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and he's, you know, he everything he does, he makes no mistakes, and that was the game that I was supposed to have today. I'm sorry, did you just try to blame Jesus for the fact that you missed four kicks in one football game? Get the fuck out of here with that.
So if you want to hear more about the reaction from the Bears win, go check out Locked On Bears and Lauren Cox, the host over there. Probably talking a lot about Cody Parkey today, but on today's episode, let's talk a little bit about that DNP from Cameron Payne. You know, we thought this was coming Thursday and Friday. We had talked about this, Matt, saying that, you know, I think after the Pelicans loss and watching him run up and down the floor and miss three straight possessions, Cameron Payne gets ripped out of the game. And then all of a sudden we're like, okay, that's probably the last we're going to see of Cameron Payne, and Ryan Arcidiacono is probably going to start. And nonetheless, that happens on Saturday night against Cleveland, and Ryan Arcidiacono backed up that willingness to start in 15 points and 6-8 shooting and did a lot for the offense. And I think, you know, outside of the second half, the first half kind of exploded. Ryan Arcidiacono, you could see his, Fred inserting him into the starting lineup kind of opened things up on the offensive end. What did you think of that so far? And you think that's the last game Cameron Payne sees as a Bull, and especially when Chris Dunn comes back?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where Cam goes from here, if anywhere. I mean, to me, it is clear that Archie is a better option to be your starter, de facto starter, until Chris Dunn comes back. And even, you know, it's noteworthy to say that it's not like he just switched Archie and Cam in the rotation, but instead removed Cam entirely. Blakeney was the first guard off the bench for Fred on Friday night. And Shaq Harrison, who we really hadn't seen much of, if at all, in their string of recent games, was also coming in, getting 18 minutes in that game. And Shaq Harrison looked pretty solid. Looked like the guy that we had talked a little bit about earlier when he made some appearances with his effort on the defensive end, with some smart plays offensively, setting up looks for guys, knocking down a shot or two when he can. I mean, we had that one half of basketball where Cam all of a sudden was one of the best three-point shooters in the league. Since that one night, Cam has just been bad through and through. Dribbles too much, can't run the offense, isn't shooting well. To me, I don't see any reason why Fred, unless, God forbid, somebody else in addition to Dunn gets hurt, puts Campaign back in this rotation at all.
Yeah, I felt like that was the only real reason why Fred kept going to him. It's like, okay, if Cam's on the floor, at least maybe he'll be able to score and maybe be some sort of three-point presence for the Bulls. Outside of that Charlotte Hornets game, though, he hasn't been anything for the Bulls. So good on Fred, too, finally kind of doing what he wants to do. You know, we've talked about it multiple times about how I don't think he really wants to play Campaign, but he's doing it to kind of appease the front office. And now just putting him in a clear DNP against the worst team in basketball, too. That's the other thing. You can't even get on the floor against the 1-10 Cavaliers. That's awful. And they're 0-6 on the road. So to me, Ryan Arcidiacono, and same thing with Shaq Harrison. I thought Shaq Harrison, too, the limited time we saw him, we only saw him for 18 minutes last night, 3-for-5 from the field, 6 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and 3 steals. He was getting his hands in there, kind of trying to force some steals, and you saw on 2 back-to-back plays where Shaq Harrison was able to get a steal and ran it for a fast break. So I'd rather see him until we get Chris Dunn back. I would much prefer to see Shaq Harrison over Cameron Payne.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, why not? You sign the kid. Take a look at him. See if he's a piece worth keeping. And also, we've seen some pretty impressive performances from Tyler Ulis for the Windy City Bulls in the last week or so. So, you know, maybe bring that guy up at some point and play him for, you know, a couple of games off the bench. See what you have there. But I know, and as you said, it certainly seems like Fred is not a fan of Campaign and that he has been giving him these opportunities because the front office really still is trying to justify that trade. Which, you know, especially after watching Mitchell Robinson and some of his strong games, which, guess what? That's the pick that ended up being the pick that the Bulls used, or the Bulls sent away in the trade to get Doug McDermott, in the Gary Harris Yusuf Nurkic trade, and then the Campaign swap. Like, yeah, it's a bad look. And the Bulls really wanted Campaign to work out because of what they gave up to get him. But guess what? He's not good. And that, do you remember that report that came out? And I think it was a Cowley. It was a Cowley going to Cowley, but certainly seems like there's some truth to it now, where the Bulls coaching staff and players, upon Campaign's arrival, it took them merely one practice, maybe two, to figure out that, what was the quote? Like, this kid can't play basketball? Like,
yeah, I remember it was scouts, hey, and coaches.
Yeah, guess what? Turns out that Cowley going to Cowley report actually had some truth to it.
I want to get to some Cowley stuff at the back end of the episode because he wrote a sizzler this weekend that I want to kind of get into along with the Jimmy Butler trade this weekend. But another thing that I wanted to mention, Matt, just looking at this Cavs team, and, you know, the Bulls started out with 37 points in the first quarter. Everything was rolling. LaVine was doing 360 dunks in the first half. Like, it seemed like this team was out to a substantial start against a terrible, terrible Cavaliers team. But then they play the other three quarters and they make Tristan Thompson, a $20 million man, look like he's worth getting paid that much with 22 points, 12 rebounds and assists, 2 steals and 10 for 14 shooting. Wendell Carter Jr. and Jabari Parker didn't have a great night on the glass either. And, you know, that's probably going to continue to be a constant until you get Markkanen and Portis back. But, you know, Larry Nance Jr. with 14 rebounds, Tristan Thompson with 12 rebounds, and they let the Cavaliers back into the game after a 16-point lead in the first half. You know, that's playing to your level of competition, because before this, the Bulls have been in every game that they've played basically up until you go all the way back to the Warriors game where they got blown out. But they've been in games with some of the top-tier teams in this league, and then you come in and barely squeak out a win against the Cavaliers. I don't know. Saturday night was just kind of a blah game for me. I don't know about you.
It was gross. Like, it was gross. It was the Bulls barely managing to beat a team that is one of the few teams in the league right now that's probably a little bit worse than the Bulls are. as far as just a lack of talent. You mentioned Tristan the night he had Larry Nance also double-digit rebounds. The Cavs as a team, 15 offensive boards, 53 total, murdering the Bulls on the glass. Yet another team, and a bad team, destroying the Bulls. Bulls got out-rebounded 53-38. And guess what? The Cavs aren't a very good team, but if you give them a million second-chance opportunities, they're going to claw their way back into the game, and that's what they did. You mentioned the Bulls built, like, I think it was a 16-point lead at one point in the first half, and then, poof, that lead vanished, and the Bulls are tied at halftime against this pathetic excuse for an NBA team. I was not encouraged by anything, really, other than Fred finally figured it out and put Archie Diacono in the starting unit and benched Campaign. That is the only good thing that came from this game. You know, it was awesome to see LaVine have a night where, you know, he was high-flying and dunks and keeping that 20-point game streak alive and all that stuff. But really, like, the Bulls played poorly against a bad team and barely beat a bad team. To me, this was a great opportunity for a tank win, just like their stupid win against the Knicks earlier. And guess what? The Bulls are going to be racking up wins against bad teams, but I don't see them beating any good teams, certainly until some of these other players come back. It was it was not a fun game for me to watch. And anyone trying to give Jabari a whole bunch of credit for that game-sealing block, shut up. Just shut up. It's it's one play, and it happened after his man, J.R. Smith, simply ran around him and could have, should have, probably gotten an offensive rebound if that ball takes a different bounce. But no, let's give Jabari all the credit in the world for making one defensive play through a dozen games.
I agree on the campaign DNP and Ryan Arcidiacono being in the starting lineup being the highlight of this game. And we'll get into that block on the other side of a break, Matt, because I don't want your head to explode in our first segment here. We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. We come back, we're going to do just that, wrap up a little bit more from this Cavaliers game, final possessions, and some notes that I made from that Warriors game up until this point, and some things the Bulls are actually doing really well. Maybe you can credit Fred Hoiberg for that. Hit us up at 331-979-1369 or on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Same thing on Instagram. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. Back here on Locked On Bulls, 331-979-1369. Matt, you know, looking at this Cavaliers team, I had to laugh to myself because I'm like, man, this has gone downhill quickly. Like, LeBron leaves, you lose in an embarrassing fashion in the NBA Finals. Can't even believe that this team got dragged by LeBron James all the way up against the Warriors. You know, you think that they're going to be competitive somewhere around, I don't know, 38 to 42 wins. Then you lose Kevin Love. You lose four of your rotation players, and they're playing pretty beat up the way the Bulls are playing. But I didn't think it was going to go down this fast. And I'm kind of, as a Bulls fan, it makes me feel a little bit better that the Cavaliers are struggling finally for once. But then I immediately get pissed off. You don't want to know why? Because the Cavaliers are probably going to end up with Cam Reddish, Zion Williamson, or RJ Barrett at the top of the lottery again next year. After once LeBron left the first time, they got Kyrie Irving. And then LeBron comes back. They've got Kyrie and LeBron. You know, there hasn't been any type of struggle for a team that has had one of the greatest players of all time. And I need that struggle to last just a little bit longer for me. But I immediately got pissed off when I thought about this summer, the potential of one of those three Duke players going to the Cavaliers.
It's very likely. It's very likely that for the second time, the Cavs will end up with the number one pick the season after LeBron departs.
Because I hate it.
If you lose LeBron James on a team that is LeBron James and a bunch of role players, that team suddenly becomes a very good, not a very good team. And then certainly if you lose Kevin Love in addition to that, this team is severely lacking in talent. And I mean, at 1-11, they are the odds on favorites right now with Kevin Love expected to miss even more time. Whether or not that toe injury is really serious or they're going to be extra cautious with him for the sake of conserving the tank, just like the Bulls were extra cautious with LaVine last year, both before he came back and then shutting him down before the season ended. Same thing with Chris Dunn. It's, of course, in the Cavs' best interest. And yeah, it is kind of annoying to say, well, man, it really stinks that just because your team loses LeBron, you basically are just automatically guaranteeing yourself, you know, that top spot in the lottery. But guess what? Those lottery odds are shaken out differently this season. 14% for the top three across the board. So it's not like even if the Cavs secure the worst record in the league, they're automatically going to have the best odds. Which is why, to me, meaningless wins against teams like this and the Knicks piss me off right now. Because the Bulls, I don't think, especially once Dunn and Marketing come back and Bobby comes back, are not going to be bad enough to really be tanking with the best of them. But they could be right now losing some games that might come back to benefit them. But instead, they're beating bad teams, which is not where you want to be headed right now, considering that the Bulls, realistically, not a playoff team this year. Not going to happen.
Yeah, and I still don't know if I can buy into the idea with just the Bulls hanging around with these good teams early on. I don't even know if I buy into the idea once we're completely healthy, whether that's half the season, whether that's three quarters of the season, if this team is even bad enough to be in the top five. You know, certainly last year with a bunch of tanking teams, it was a little bit more difficult. So maybe that's the angle you could take and say, well, there's not that many teams trying to purposely lose this year just because the odds have changed a little bit. And I think teams have gotten a little bit better. You know, but there's still a lot of bad teams out there. We thought Phoenix was going to be a little bit better. Nope. You didn't think the Cleveland Cavaliers were going to be this bad, and they are. You know, there's a lot of other teams around there kind of hanging in the mix with the Bulls. I don't know if I'm fully convinced yet that the Bulls are going to be bad enough to be back in that top three. So I don't know if I'm going to get hung up about them winning meaningless games now. You know, to me, I don't even know if it would matter when we get all the way to March and we're talking about a Bulls team that could be hanging around 26 to 30 wins. So once they get fully healthy, I'm still not convinced that this team is bad enough to be back in the top three. So I'm not even going to kind of get myself all worked up about that anyway. The other thing I wanted to note, though, about this Cavs game, Matt, let's talk about that last play. So the Bulls squander their lead. They come down to crunch time. You know, the Cavaliers have an opportunity to tie it, to take the lead, and Jabari Parker ends up with a missed rebound and then turns around and blocks the final shot for a game-winning shot. And he walked off the court like he had just hit a game-winning buzzer-beater three against probably the best team in the NBA. Like, he took his jersey off and walked straight to the locker room. What'd you think about that?
There comes Sexton. 8 seconds. Murray Drew told to go with five. Here he comes, end of the lane, shot, no. Rebound, back up, blocked. And the Bulls hang on and win.
Wow. Big win. You can drive home safely, Chicago. Beat.
That's what I think. Come on. Yeah, I'm sure Jabari was just super pleased with himself for being the hero in that moment. But come on, really, Archie Diacono deserves just as much, if not more, credit for the one forcing Colin Sexton into a bad spot on the floor and a bad situation. And then Jabari managed to block a second chance opportunity after failing to get the rebound, as you said, because guess what? Colin Sexton's like 5 feet tall, and Jabari didn't even have to jump to make that block, which is a good thing, because as we all know, Jabari, not so much with the jumping these days. I mean, it's annoying. I would have loved a tank win, a.k.a. the Cavs hitting a last-second shot there to give the Bulls a loss. And the one opportunity where I, you know, am like, really? This is the moment where Jabari decides to make a defensive play when I would not have minded at all the Cavs coming back and beating the Bulls in that disgusting basketball game? It's not changing anything. It's not changing the fact that several times throughout that game, leading up to that final possession, Jabari was caught dogging back on defense, including after a turnover that was entirely his fault. And I guess, you know, Fred didn't come and yell at him and make some kind of gesture like he did in that game earlier last week. But you can't. How much credit you really want to give him for making one play? And people, well, he, you know, wasn't just the one block. He had a pretty good game. 13 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. What, I mean, does it really move the needle for you all that much? Jabari having that block and that blah game against the worst team in the league? No. To me, it doesn't change anything about Jabari.
You want to know one thing is this doesn't really surprise me. For a lot of Bulls fans, sure, it does surprise you. You know, you consider him not being paid to play for defense, like that quote going out there, the multiple times where you've seen him just not give any effort throughout the game. But this is the one thing that kind of stuck with me, Matt. I wrote this last week talking about clutch time performances and just kind of looking at the Bulls overall. And Jabari Parker was fourth in the league in clutch time stats. No surprise, because most of the Bulls were in the top 10, the amount of close games that they were playing. The one thing that did surprise me, though, and this isn't considering the last two or three games the Bulls have played, but regardless, Jabari Parker had the best defensive rating of any of the Bulls in clutch time. And that was 37 minutes at the time, so we're going back to last Tuesday. He had a 94.5 defensive rating. And the one thing that I noted is, well, obviously, like, Jabari Parker can play defense when he wants to, but more times than not, he doesn't really care, nor does he want to. So I'm not surprised that in late game situations, Parker's actually giving a shit what he's doing on the defensive side. So I wasn't really surprised that he came up with the block on Saturday night to win the game, because he has shown flashes when the Bulls need a defensive stop that he's like, oh, I'll give a little bit of effort. And whether the outcome is and ended up winning a game or the outcome is you end up losing, either way, I noticed that in Jabari Parker's defensive rating that he was among the Bulls' best. And that's, you know, go figure. You know, when you want to give effort, then the effort actually shows. But throughout the rest of the 40-plus minutes of the game, you see bad defensive possessions from him. Well, but I will give him a little bit of credit in clutch.
Well, see, to me, that's the issue. To me, that's even more infuriating. Because we all know that Zach LaVine has his own struggles on the defensive end. But Zach LaVine is noticeably trying, and not just trying on the final possession of the game, or not just trying in the fourth quarter. Jabari is not great defensively, but it's the fact that we have repeatedly caught him not trying. To me, it's inexcusable and unforgivable, and it's like a double down on a bad look for a guy who immediately came to Chicago and in his first public interview said, well, they're not paying people to play defense in this league these days, because he's essentially just validating his own take and his awful take that defense doesn't matter. And that's a really bad look.
I don't disagree with that. And I'm curious to see how he builds on this now. If, you know, he's all of a sudden flushed with confidence, or if this is like, yeah, this is what I can do. And I don't know. I guess for the players, you know, getting a game-winning block is great, and that's why he celebrated on his home floor. It's actually something that he was touted for. He's been criticized for since the minute he got here in Chicago, and he actually comes up with a defensive play. So I can see why he had the reaction that he did on Saturday night, but come on, man. I mean, this is a 1-11 Cavaliers team we're talking about here. And up against, I think Colin Sexton was the guy who took the final shot, and he made the block on him. Colin Sexton hasn't been great either. The one last thing before we get to another break, Matt. Here's a little tidbit from you, and I got tipped off by Casey Johnson. He had tweeted something similar to this, but I was curious going back to after the Warriors game. So that Tuesday after the Warriors game leading up to right now, the Bulls have played in 6 games. And how have they fared in defensive rating so far? Did you realize that the Bulls, since that Warriors game, have been 5th in the league in defensive rating at 103.6? How crazy is that? A turnaround from an embarrassing loss against the Warriors, and now you're the 5th in defensive rating in the last 6 games?
I thought it was 6th, not 5th.
5th. Now they've moved up to 5th, so 103.6. Detroit Pistons are at 104.3. The time that Casey's tweet came out, I think there were still some games in action, so the Bulls actually moved up to 5th.
All right. Well, I mean, cool.
Credit to Fred?
I mean, credit to some pretty disgustingly bad teams the Bulls have played since then. Like, their loss to the Rockets did not play well. Their loss, or their win over the Knicks are garbage. Their win over the Cavs are garbage. Their loss to the Pelicans didn't actually shoot all that well. Anthony Davis just had himself a night. Like, I guess it's a little bit encouraging to see that trend, but until that trend actually continues for longer than a stretch of like 6 games, no, I'm not taking anything out of that.
I mean, 4 of those 6 teams are playoff teams, right? Nuggets, Pacers, Rockets, and Pelicans. The Knicks are terrible, and the Cavaliers are terrible.
Not the Rockets. At the moment, not the Rockets.
There's still a lot of season left. And when you got James Harden and Chris Paul and Clint Capella, come on, they'll figure it out. But still.
Hey, I mean, they haven't figured it out, and they certainly didn't look like a team that hasn't figured out when they beat the Bulls.
All right, I'll give you a little bit of credit there, but still, to change from being the worst defensive rated team in the NBA to start first 7 games, the Bulls were a 117.8 for a net rating of 9.6, negative 9.6. Like, that turnaround is pretty incredible, man. You got to give Fred Hoiberg at least a little bit of credit in some of these rotations that he's using to be a little bit more effective. And it's not like the Bulls, like I had said before, it's not like the Bulls are playing trash teams. Four of those six teams I still predict to be in the playoffs. So at that point, hanging around with those types of teams and having a little bit of defensive prowess after getting embarrassed on your home floor is a little, deserving of a little bit of credit. But the one worry here, Matt, is the Bulls' offensive rating has disappeared. They're at just over 100 on the offensive rating. And if you know anything about defense and offensive rating, you want a high offensive rating and a low defensive rating. And the Bulls are still a negative 3.3, and that serves to be the bottom five in the NBA. So while the defense is showing up, the offense has completely disappeared outside of Zach LaVine.
Well, yeah, because you know it's no surprise that their offensive rating is not that great, because for the last stretch of, I don't know, probably it's close to 10 games now since, you know, Dunn came back for one game and then got hurt and Bobby got hurt. It's Zach LaVine doing a lot of stuff, trying to do a lot of stuff by himself and not a whole lot else. You got Jabari jacking up long twos. You got Archie Diacono somehow, you know, trying to run this offense and play efficiently, but like Blakeney's jacking up shots, Holiday's jacking up shots, and LaVine's trying to do everything himself. It's no surprise the offensive rating's plummeted.
It's true. I will agree with that. You know, we talked about secondary scores, and there hasn't been a reliable secondary score on this team since Bobby Portis went out. All right, to finish up the show, got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, going to wrap up the show with Jimmy Butler trade. That was the talk of the weekend. On top of taking a little bit of a preview, the Dallas Mavericks, we already have seen once this season, but without Bobby Portis now, might be a little bit different. So 331-979-1369 is the place to hit us up if you want to interact with the show. Be back here on Locked On Bulls. Stay with us. Back here on Locked On Bulls, 331-979-1369 is the place to hit us up. Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Bulls there, and Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. All right, wrap up the show, Matt. Let's go in the direction of the Dallas Mavericks tonight real quick. You know, their rookie sensation in Luka Doncic has been balling out so far, 20.3 points per game, just under 5 assists per game, and 6.5 rebounds to go with his shooting of nearly 50% from the field and nearly 40% from three. So he's been really good since the last time we saw him a few weeks ago. How do the Bulls contain this Dallas Mavericks team where they were within a few possessions of winning that game just a few weeks ago when it was 115-109? So what's the key to tonight's game against the Dallas Mavericks?
Well, I mean, DeAndre Jordan absolutely destroyed them on the boards. Sound familiar? You know, DeAndre had 16 rebounds total that night, including 6 on the offensive glass, much like Tristan Thompson abused them on the offensive boards in that Cavs game over the weekend. You also had Dallas hitting 20 of their 21 free throw attempts, knocked down 15 threes, shot 43% from the field. The Bulls, 19 turnovers. This was the one game where the Bulls got Chris Dunn back and before Bobby Portis got hurt. So, as you know, as much as they have had this season, they had their full lineup of guys. And Zach LaVine went off for 34 points, including hitting 5 of his 7 three-point attempts to keep the Bulls barely hanging around in this game. Meanwhile, I mean, you mentioned Luka. Dude looks like an absolute beast. He is questionable. I think the most recent update I've heard is that he will likely play tonight. He's dealing with a little thigh bruise. Wesley Matthews is, however, ruled out. Didn't even travel with the team to Chicago.
That's unfortunate for the Bulls.
Last night, which, you know, he had an okay game when they
he stinks.
I mean, he's not great. He put in 20 points when they beat the Bulls earlier this season, including knocking down 4 threes, but he was 4 of 11. So, I mean, a little bit shorthanded, but expecting to have Luka. Guess what? Much like the first time these teams played, if LaVine does not have himself a monster night and going off for 30-plus, especially no Chris Dunn, who dished out 7 assists in that game, no Bobby Portis, this looks like a loss to me.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, too bad Wesley Matthews isn't playing tonight, because you know, as frustrated as we've been with Cameron Payne here, the same similar reasons, they've been pissed off with Wesley Matthews. You know, 16.8 points per game is pretty good, but when you're shooting nearly 40% from the field total, that's not great for a shooting guard, and a guy who's only clipping at 2.7 rebounds per game and 2.6 assists per game. They've been pretty frustrated in Dallas with Wesley Matthews so far this season. But yeah, Harrison Barnes hasn't been great either for the Dallas Mavericks. He's shooting under 40% at 37.7 on 13.3 shots per game. That is awful. You want to talk about bad Justin Holiday? Talk about Harrison Barnes and the money he's making, how bad he's been. But you're exactly right, man. Like, I would like to see, now that Wendell Carter Jr. has gotten a look at DeAndre Jordan, maybe watching some film tonight can make some adjustments on him and not get killed on the boards. I would imagine we're going to probably see Robin Lopez again tonight and probably for the near future, because it looks like Felicio is now out of the rotation again. So yeah, most important thing is just hang around on the boards, man, and don't turn the ball over like they did the last time we saw them in 19 turnovers. That was not great. But yeah, they're going to need another big performance from Zach LaVine tonight.
They certainly will, and it would be nice to see Wendell have a bit better game. This was still early in the season when he wasn't really looking for his shot all that much and was not trying to get that involved in the offensive end. Finished with just 4 points on 2 of 7 shooting, while he did grab nine rebounds and dish out 4 assists. I think we can see a double-double effort from Wendell tonight, and hopefully the Bulls can limit DeAndre and the damage he's doing on the boards. And as far as containing Luka Doncic, I mean, best of luck, guys. Hopefully having Archie in that starting lineup will help them set the tone defensively, as opposed to last time. What I mean, they did have Chris Dunn in the starting lineup in that first game against the Mavs, setting the tone defensively, and it still didn't really work all that well, giving up 115. We'll see what they could do tonight.
Last 5 games, Dallas Mavericks are 2-3. Their offensive rating at a 110.2 and their defensive rating at a 109.4. So you're hoping that the Bulls' shot is on tonight. That will help them a ton. If the Bulls are missing from three at a significant amount, I could see this Bulls team being down by a dozen or more potentially. So we'll see tonight, but hopefully they can continue their good defensive prowess, and maybe the offense shows up beside Zach LaVine tonight. All right, the final thing I want to get to on today's show, and that's the talk of the entire weekend, Matt. The saga in Minnesota is finally over, at least for the Jimmy Butler sake. Jimmy Butler going to the 76ers. In return, they'll get Dario Saric, Robert Covington, and a future second round pick. And also, I think they're getting Jared Bayless in that deal too. And then Justin Patton, who was ended up being where the Timberwolves took the Bulls slot when they made that deal a year ago, that's who they took with their first round pick. So he's going to Philadelphia as well. Reaction, does this make Philadelphia a complete contender now? Or are you still going to be like, eh, I don't know if Jimmy Butler's in shape. I don't know how that's going to work so far. Let's pump the brakes in the 76ers. Or how do you feel about this deal now I'm coming back to the East?
I mean, assuming that Jimmy is in fact healthy and the whole general soreness thing was just a ruse as part of his plan to get himself out of Minnesota.
General soreness.
I mean, yeah, salute to General Soreness. If he is fully healthy, Jimmy, best, top 20 two-way player in the league, Jimmy, obviously I think he makes that team better. But with losing Covington and losing Saric, you do lose two guys who are, capable of shooting the ball from the perimeter. Jimmy has improved his three-point game a little bit. I think he's actually knocking down like around 34-35% this season. Which is better than his career average. So in some sense, they lost some shooting. We also have heard that they're interested in adding some veteran shooting. They might be looking at like trying to get Kyle Korver out of that pointless Cavs team, which would be cool.
Justin Holiday.
No. I mean, I wish, but no. To me, obviously, the biggest question is how does he mesh with Embiid and Simmons, the young guys who are the rising stars? Guess what? He did not do so well with that part of his job in Minnesota. He clashed with people in the locker room in Chicago, and he clashed with people in the locker room in Minnesota. Will he do that for his third team in the NBA, or will he find a way to make things work? Will he be impressed enough with the work ethic and all that stuff when it comes to the young stars on the Sixers team? But I am a little worried about their lack of shooting. But I'm, you know, having Jimmy Butler on that team and a big three of Butler, Embiid, and Simmons certainly, I think, puts Philly in the conversation of pushing towards a top two or three seed in the East after they've had kind of a slower start than many expected.
Yeah, that's the common theme that I don't think anybody continues to bring up is like, didn't we think even here in Chicago when Jimmy Butler was still here that he wanted to be the number one guy on a team? Like, wasn't that kind of the main story, how he wanted to be the number one guy here in Chicago? And he was for a short time. But then he went to the Timberwolves, still isn't really the main guy there. Like, Karl-Anthony Towns was still touted as maybe the main guy, their centerpiece. Didn't really work. Now he's going to the 76ers, where your cornerstones are Embiid and Simmons, and it's not Butler. And while Butler might want to sign an extension in the summer, he's still not going to be the number one guy on that team. Like, as far as the fans see it, it's not going to be Butler. So is that going to wear down his welcome too? Like, you saw that in Minnesota. He was frustrated with the work ethic of the guys around him, maybe not getting enough credit, he feels like. Going to the 76ers, is that going to change things? That's the biggest question here is, like, if Jimmy Butler wants to win, he'll shut up, play, let Embiid and Simmons be the cornerstones and prove it on the floor instead of running his mouth. And that's where I think it comes down to, does Jimmy Butler actually want to win, or does he just want to be the centerpiece of a team and make a bunch of money? And I think you're going to find that out now with him being on the 76ers.
I can't wait. As just innocent bystander, objective person just watching from afar, trying to figure out how he gets along with those guys, and especially Joel Embiid, who is the king of NBA Twitter right now and a big personality. How will his big personality mesh or clash with Jimmy's? And I think that will have that will go a long way in determining just how successful this Philly team is. Because, I mean, to Jimmy's credit, he did take that young, developing Minnesota team and lead them to the playoffs for the first time in like 14 years in that franchise's history. So he did accomplish that. And if Jimmy didn't miss that stretch of games with an injury in the back end of last season, they probably could have been somewhere in the top four of the Western Conference seeding, as opposed to fighting in on the last night of the regular season to get the eighth seed. That's how good Jimmy is. He is that good of a player. So he could take this Philly team that was young and inexperienced and couldn't get past the second round last season and get them to the conference final, get them to take another step. That's totally possible, but it's all about how those guys mesh and how they work together and where Jimmy needs to see himself on, you know, in the pecking order of whose team that is, because that whole experiment did not work out well in Minnesota.
Over under on how many games it takes before he has a blow up on Markelle Fultz or Ben Simmons. Both two dudes who went high in the lottery that can't shoot worth a damn, especially Markelle Fultz.
I'll say 7.5 games.
Oh, man. I hope it works out there, man, because that 76ers team is pretty fun. It is pretty fun to watch. But now that they're kind of lacking depth, like Robert Covington and Dario Saric were main role players on that team, and one of which who started, and both guys played starter minutes. So I don't know what they're going to do to fill those holes, but definitely adding Jimmy Butler to a core of Simmons and Embiid isn't bad. And, you know, the Celtics, with their slow start, they've got to be looking down at the 76ers now being like, oh, shit, they just made a move for Butler. He's back in the East. That might be a team to be worried about. And the Toronto Raptors, who have been the crazy story of the East, and Kyle Lowry and Kawhi Leonard. And then also you've got the Milwaukee Bucks now, who are playing out of their minds. And Brooke Lopez, too, has been a key addition over the summer for that Bucks team. So now it looks like you've got kind of like a power four in the East, which is kind of crazy to think about. And the one thing that will be kind of exciting is now you get to see Jimmy Butler at least return to the United Center and play in the Eastern Conference this year. So that should be kind of fun to watch.
Yeah. And, the other thing that deserves mentioning, and a shout out to a former Chicago Bull here and a very new on the job general manager, how about Elton Brand pulling off this trade? And his first year running that Sixers team, because I don't know if you read that breakdown of like the last, you know, several weeks and then the last several days of how exactly the Jimmy thing went down. But part of that column that Woj wrote for ESPN mentioned that Elton Brand and the Sixers were kind of quietly lurking in the background of these Jimmy trade talks since the get-go, and were patiently waiting for the talks with the Miami Heat to dissolve and for Tibbs and the Wolves to demand too much and for those trade talks to break apart. And then some of the other teams that were, you know, interested in calling Minnesota about Jimmy's availability. The Sixers were always there, but they were slow playing it the whole time. And I think they got themselves a pretty good deal. So congrats and kudos to former Bulls lottery draft pick Elton Brand, who I'm hoping will do well in that role, because I always really liked Elton Brand as a player. Now he's kind of taken on this new identity as an NBA person, and this is a hell of a land for him in his first year on the job.
It's pretty crazy because, you know, he got a lot of the 76ers got a lot of criticism for hiring him and saying, like, can you imagine a former player, you know, not even being out of the league? I think, what was it, 4 years or maybe even a little bit, a touch longer?
Not even, dude, like he officially retired like last year.
So imagine getting passed up from a guy in a front office who's been working his entire life to get an opportunity at that position. A lot of people criticize them for hiring a guy and letting him jump a lot of people that might have been in line for that job. And then now being able to pull off this deal in his first year. Yeah, kudos to him. But the other thing, Matt, I wanted to touch on before we get out of here. We can finally close the book, and I think we've done this already a couple months ago on this Jimmy Butler trade and the one that the Bulls made with the Timberwolves originally. You know, I got my jokes off on Twitter this weekend because, of course, you have to get your jokes off. But the reality of the situation is the Timberwolves did, and Tom Thibodeau more specifically, did what he needed to do in both situations. Last year trading for Jimmy Butler and now getting rid of Jimmy Butler in this instance, he did what was needed for him. Not necessarily what the Timberwolves think is the best for their organization and their future, but Tom Thibodeau did what was specifically good for him, and I can't fault him for that. Going out and getting two guys that can maybe potentially help them stay competitive while Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins are signed to long-term deals, as opposed to going out and getting those four future first-round picks from the Rockets. Like, let's be honest, Tom Thibodeau is not going to be around to see the fruition of those four first-round picks, and they're not going to help Andrew Wiggins or Karl Anthony Towns. By the time their contracts are up, those four first-round picks might be 2-3 years into the league already. So I can see why Tom Thibodeau made both of those deals. It made sense for him at both times.
Tibbs might not even be around to see the fruition of Saric and Covington. That's true. I mean, based on that very same Woj report that I was mentioning earlier, Tibbs could be gone before this, before the All-Star break. That's entirely possible. Certainly, it sounds like he will not be back next season because of how poorly this whole thing went, you know, fell apart. And you know, I think Tibbs may have been slightly overvalued as a coach with his first head coaching gig with the Bulls, as well as he did first getting that team to, you know, the number one seed. And then even after the Rose injury and injury started to pile up, doing a lot with very little and injury depleted rosters, overachieving with those rosters. He is clearly not a front office guy. This whole experiment that's been done a few times around the league now, including his old mentor, Doc Rivers in Boston, and now Doc's, you know, role with the Clips. This whole, like, coach and president thing, it doesn't work. And clearly with Tibbs, it didn't work. I don't think this is necessarily Tibbs' last job coaching in the NBA. I think if he's got the right pieces, he can still be a good coach. If he, kind of modifies his strategies and maybe does a little bit of the tinkering with not playing guys too many minutes, I don't think it's a huge problem. I don't think it's a huge adjustment, and I still think the guy's a pretty good coach. But clearly he was not cut out for the whole president of basketball ops thing, and that's probably going to cost him his
job. I'm glad you made mention of that, because it seems like it hasn't worked out anywhere in the NBA where it's happened before. So
like Doc failed too.
Yeah, exactly. Very curious, but yeah, book is officially closed. Kind of sucks that we've got to see Jimmy Butler in the East again, but we'll continue to monitor that. I'm curious what that 76ers team is going to look like, and I think the first opportunity he's going to play is on Wednesday at the Magic, so we'll see if he makes his debut there. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls on Instagram and Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnBulls. Scheibels. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Enjoy Mavericks and Bulls tonight. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.